November 28th edition of This Week in Palestine on WZBC 90.3, a weekly show hosted for many years by our beloved Sharif Fahm and continued in his loving memory by his friends. I'm your host, Espina Mutsouris, and today's show will focus on how the arts and specifically theater can help to promote peace with justice in Palestine. Our guests today include Iman Aoun, director of Ashtar Theater in Palestine and creator of the Gaza Monologues, a global youth initiative for children's rights in Gaza and the world through theater. To learn more about the Gaza Monologues project, please visit www.thegazamonologues.com. Ashtar Theater specifically is a nonprofit organization that was established in 1991 by two prominent Palestinian actors, Edward Mualim and Iman Aoun, who worked in theater since 1977. Ashtar came to life in Jerusalem as the first theater training organization for youth in Palestine. It's a dynamic local Palestinian theater troupe with a truly progressive global perspective. The aim of Ashtar Theater is to promote creativity and commitment for change through a novel combination of training and acting programs, as well as through professional theater performances. Specifically, if marginalized audiences are unable to come to their main location in Ramallah, Ashtar Theater moves its stage to these often remote areas to include everyone. Welcome, Iman, to our show.
Good morning, and thank you.
Good morning, thank you. I'd like to begin by asking you how Ashtar Theater became involved in creating the Gaza Monologues.
Of course, after the war that had taken place last year between 2008 December and January 2009, we all felt that that we are really paralyzed, sitting there in front of the TV, and as Palestinians, we became only statistics on the news and in the media, and therefore we had to take an action. We had to really think that we have to raise the voices of the people, because in the end, those who are living under such atrocity are people with lives and stories, and so they are connected to our global and human society, and so this can't continue like this. That was the initial urge, if you want to, that drove me to think that that I have to do something in order to make these voices heard by the international community. And so from one side, also the youth that are the people who have nothing to do in the conflict and who are growing in such a desperate situation, they are the young people of today, but they might be the leaders of tomorrow. And so what kind of society are we leading? What kind of society are we trying to form? And so not only in Palestine, but also in the world, if the youth of today don't understand which world they are living in, then it is too late when they grow up. So that these were, as I said, the leading points that took me into the idea of that project. Besides the war is not only the effect of the war is not only materialistic; it is very much psychological as well. Mm-hmm. And so, when we leave our young people in a state of despair, then that despair would lead them into frustration and into violence against themselves first and foremost, and then against their society. And so, it's a vicious circle. So, we wanted. Yes,
exactly. And what I was going to ask him on, and I'm sorry to interrupt, is given the situation in Gaza and given the situation and the urgency of giving young people and not only Palestinian young people a voice, what was the response of the young people that were specifically involved in the Gaza Monologues project?
We worked with 33 young people from Gaza, 17 female and 16 male. They were all very excited. In the beginning, of course, it was a bit difficult for them to really get into the deep emotions that had been left after the war. But slowly and gradually, because we were working with them through theater exercises, creative writing, and psychological follow-up all the time, and so they were able to somehow look into their experience in a different way. So they became stronger. They had grew into more realization of the role, more confidence of the voices. They became a team, especially when they also understood the nature of the project, that it is also going to raise the voices on the platforms of the international arenas, and mainly when they realized that we are taking these voices to the decision makers in the UN. Mm-hmm. And so they really felt that they are agents of change, mm-hmm. that their voices are able to make a difference, not only for themselves, but also for their peers in Gaza, and for their families, for their society. And so now they really feel that they have a great responsibility to proceed, and they are different than when we started with them, at least on their personal level and their psychological stability.
According to your website, and in a similar vein, there have already been performances of the Gaza monologues held around the world, including such places as Gaza, France, England, Zimbabwe. How have the audiences responded to your theater productions, and how has that impacted work for justice in Palestine?
Well, the nature of the Gaza monologues was that we wanted to these 33 voices of the Gaza people to reach as many as possible audiences in around the world. And so we started to look for partners in different countries. We had and we have for the moment 36 countries around the world who are working with youth in every city, and the cities had reached up to 58 cities. So on the 17th of October, around the world, in 50 cities and in 30 countries, the Gaza monologues were done simultaneously with 1,000 young person from the different countries in 18 languages that were translated, that had translated these monologues into. And so everybody had performed these monologues on the same time. Today, as I said, we have already, after the October 17th, six more countries and about eight more cities doing these performances. These performances are continuing. They are not stopping. Every day we have new partners coming in. And so that is creating somehow an awareness campaign. And not only towards Gaza and towards the rights of the Palestinian people, that to live in dignity and in peace, in just peace, but also it is really raising loudly the fact that all young people have to live in peace around the world, and so the solidarity with the Palestinians is growing stronger by the day, especially among young people, and this is very important because these young people, if they, as I said before, if they do not realize now, they might never realize what's going on, because the media is not in favor of our cause, and so this is a big part of what we want to achieve as well.
Exactly, and it's wonderful to hear that there's an increasing awareness through your performances in solidarity with Palestine. But I'd like you to tell me at this point more about the performance that's scheduled for tomorrow at the United Nations on the Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People, November 29th. What exactly do you hope to achieve with this performance, and have the students from Gaza been allowed to travel to the UN for the performance, given all of the restrictions that the Israelis normally place on Palestinian freedom of movement?
Well, first I would like to say that today is our first performance. Mm. Today, Sunday, we're holding a performance of the Gaza monologues at the La Mama theater at the village, and so at 8 o'clock. But saying this, tomorrow we are going to perform twice at the UN, once at midday, and it is going to be at the conference hall in front of the decision makers of the world, and we're going to present the Gaza monologues, not by the Gazans, but by the international youth, because what we did is we invited one young person from each participating country to come to New York, and we've been here for 10 days now, rehearsing the performance in 18 languages. Mm. 22 young people are going to present tonight and tomorrow the Gaza monologues in 18 languages in front of an audience of different backgrounds. So so tomorrow midday we're presenting to the decision makers at the UN, but in the afternoon at 6:30 in the evening we're going to present at the UN for the general audience. Mm. While tonight as well at La Mama we're presenting the same thing for the general audience, these monologues at 8 o'clock. So the main purpose of coming to New York with these international people is also to say that these young people from Gaza are not able to leave Gaza. Mm. They are there in prison for more than 3 years now. And they are not able to leave. We tried to get some people out of Gaza and bring them with us here in New York, but we were not able to achieve that. So these young people are the ambassadors of their voices.
That's wonderful to hear. What role do you think art and theater specifically play in promoting justice and peace in Palestine and in the world in general? If you could...
It has a big role. It has a big role. We look at ourselves in Ashtar Theater as agents of change. We believe that theater has to create always a debate, has always to create dialogue and to raise questions. And so and this is the role of theater in general. I mean, if a theater piece is not creating a new question into the mind of the audience, then why are we doing theater? We don't look at ourselves as theater for entertainment. As I said, we are agents of change, and so we would like through that form to also make high art, but art that could really speak not only to our senses, but also to our minds and our hearts. An art form that could really drive us into new perceptions, that could really break all walls, and mainly the unconscious wall that we usually shed towards. That is driven by different prejudices or shed us from new possibilities towards others. And so this is what we're trying to do through our theater.
I'd like to end our discussion today, our interesting discussion today, about asking how can our audience members who are listening to you today support you in becoming, in continuing your work as agents of change?
Well, first of all, by attending our shows, and of course, theater as much as all forms of art in Palestine need continuous support, moral and economical support. And so because Palestine is not a country yet, and we hope it will be one day soon, and so we really need all the support that is possible. We are going to continue with the Gaza group to train these young people, because they want to be trained in theater. We are hoping to take them next year to the European Parliament to perform at the European Parliament their monologues. And so this needs also strong support from the different parts, financial as well, as much as moral. And so this is what we can do. And beside that, the audiences that hear, that listen to these monologues, that start to understand, to realize, to be aware, they cannot anymore say, we did not know. Exactly. Everyone has a responsibility. Exactly. Every one of us. We are really living in a global village. And so if we are, then we are responsible towards one another. We are. If one part of a body is in pain, we do not cut it out. Mm. We try hard to mend it and to take care of it. And so the Palestinian case is a pain in the heart. And so in this body of the world, the heart is very precious. We have to really take good care of it. And so it is the responsibility of the whole world to make change and to bring justice to the Palestinians. We are facing the longest occupation and robbery of land. Mm-hmm. And we are the ones to be blamed. Mm-hmm. We're the victims, and we are blamed.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Iman, for joining us today and reminding us of our responsibility to heal the world and to heal ourselves. And we look forward to hearing updates on the Gaza Monologues project as it progresses. Best of luck to you, and shukran. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our next guests are Deborah Wise, Artistic Director of the Underground Railroad Theater in Cambridge, and actress Najla Said. And they'll join us today to talk about Naomi Wallace's play, Fever Chart, Three Visions of the Middle East, showing at Central Square Theater from November 18th through December 19th. And you can visit www.centralsquaretheater.org for information on showtimes and ticket prices. And I'd just like to begin just with a short intro on the Underground Railroad Theater specifically. The mission of the theater is to connect professional theater with communities, combining actors, puppetry, and music to engage diverse audiences with performances of beauty and social contact. And it's theater that challenges and delights, informs, and celebrates. It was founded in Oberlin, Ohio, one of the Midwestern stops on the Underground Railroad, and toured nationally for 30 years before becoming a resident company at Central Square Theater. And specifically, Deborah Wise, who has a lot of credits under her belt, has served as the artistic director for the company since 1988. And she's been involved in collaborative creation for over 30 years as a performer, playwright, director, and dramaturg. And she'll be joining us shortly, along with Najla Said, who herself has many credits as well. And Najla specifically is performing the role of Tanya Langer in the play, and has performed off-Broadway regionally and internationally, as well as in film and television. Her theater credits include Heather Raffo's Nine Parts of Desire and the London and New York premieres of Karen Malpighi's Prophecy. In April 2010, she also completed an eight-week sold-out off-Broadway run of her solo show, Palestine, which will also be performed here in Boston on December 8th. And her writing, in addition, has appeared in various magazines, newspapers, and anthologies. And she'll be joining us shortly as well. But now just for a short musical interlude while we bring our guests to the table. Thank you. Thank you for your patience. Our next guests, as I mentioned earlier, are Deborah Wise, Artistic Director of the Underground Railroad Theater, and actress Najla Said. And they join us today to talk about Naomi Wallace's play Fever Chart, Three Visions of the Middle East, which is showing between November 18th and December 19th at the Central Square Theater. Welcome, Deborah and Najla, to our show today.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And I'd like to start with you first, Deborah. How did the Underground Railroad Theater decide to run the play Fever Chart? What was it that captured your attention about this specific play?
Well, I would have to say that the most immediate inspiration was two summers ago, we were able to host a week-long residency with a youth theater ensemble from the Arad Cultural and Theater Arts Center from the Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem, Palestine. And it was incredibly powerful. These young people worked with our young people. We have a teen ensemble called Youth Underground. And for a week, they made theater together and got to know each other. And at the end of that week, these young people from Bethlehem gave a performance that was standing room only. Our audiences really responded. So we thought, well, we should continue this conversation. And I've always been an admirer of Naomi Wallace's work. I know her other plays very well, and had in my library a monologue piece from The Fever Chart that I just thought was beautiful. So it felt to us like The Fever Chart, Three Visions of the Middle East, was a perfect choice because the play explores the Middle East. Well, in this case, there are two vision plays. Three vision plays are dream plays based on real event. They really are about interpersonal relationships, and we thought this would be an excellent way to launch conversation, maybe new conversations, about possibilities for peace.
Mm-hmm. And one thing specifically I'd like to ask you, given your work with Al Rawad and the mission of the theater in general to connect the community and the theater through art, is what do you believe is the role of theater in promoting peace with justice in the Middle East and specifically in Palestine?
Well, I'm no expert on the Middle East, I have to admit, although I often suspect that one of the reasons I love making theater is that, like, perhaps if you're a teacher, you get to spend your professional time being a dilettante. And with each new project, you learn something about, in this case, this incredibly complex, absolutely essential and fascinating history of what's going on in the Middle East. But I think what theater can do is help raise questions. I think that's our job as theater artists, is to pose the kinds of questions that we as a community can mull over together, and to invite empathy, to kind of help an audience flex its empathetic muscles, if you will, mm-hmm. and use imagination and heart and mind to try to bridge a barrier, to try to cross a barrier. To imagine what it's like for someone whose life situation is very different from one's own. I think that those are the things that theater can do. Of course, the theater then also has to be intelligent and well-researched and based on knowledge of the situation to be truthful. So I think our first task is to find what we hope is a really good play, and then try to provide possibilities for that conversation to happen around the play, so that some kind of progress can be made. In the lobby of the theater, we've attempted to create opportunities on the walls for people to write and on the tables for people to express themselves. And we have a lot of post-performance conversations and pre-performance symposia in an attempt to encourage conversation.
Yes, I did notice that when I attended one of the performances, and specifically in the Israel-Palestinian conflict, there are a lot of barriers to cross, and there are a lot of emotions that are usually come to the foreground. And did the theater specifically experience any adverse reactions from the public or other sources in running the play?
Well, there have been, from some quarters, a concern, and I could even say a suspicion, that the play will not be, quote, balanced, which always seems to me to be an unfortunate question to bring up in relationship to a work of art. I think any expression reflects the perspective of the artist. But I understand the impulse. I think everyone wants to think that their story will be represented on stage. And I think the Palestinian narrative is one that is not expressed in this culture as often as other narratives in relationship to the Middle East are. So I think there's that kind of concern and suspicion, and I think we've addressed it well in our choice of play, but I think that probably will keep some people away. On the other hand, I felt gratified that it seems to me that a pretty representative group from the community, from various sectors, have shown up at the theater.
Mm-hmm. And I read recently you also received a very good review from the Boston Globe that appeared as well.
We did, and I have to say that one thing that gratified me most about that review was that the reviewer, I think, got something that Naomi Wallace is trying to get at, which is that Jewish Israelis and Palestinians in Israel-Palestine certainly are almost familial. To quote the play, there's an unbearable intimacy at this point in this historical moment. She's more interested in what people have, what problems and possibilities are shared, than she is in division. This is not to say that she doesn't admit to the divides and to the pain and to the history, but I think that the play tries to be forward-looking. And I'll just close by saying that there's a third of the play that often gets left out of the conversation, which is interesting, given that we're so intimately engaged in Iraq. There's a monologue by an Iraqi character, and the other side of that conversation in this play is the audience, are the Americans in the audience in this case, and we are also unbearably intimate in the ways in which we're bound up with each other now, in terms of our histories, the history of this very small and increasingly smaller world.
That's true. And specifically, I'm looking actually at the review in the Boston Globe at the moment, and he begins in the first paragraph by quoting Naomi Wallace, who said, and this gives me a nice intro to you, Najla, I'm moved by the way the system breaks people in half, and still they rise up to tell their story again with grace and eloquence. So in saying that, Najla, I'd like to ask you how it felt to assume a role from, quote-unquote, the other side. What motivated you to accept the part of Tanya Longer?
Well, it's really interesting. Everyone's been asking me this, and I don't even think it crossed my mind that I was playing an Israeli until I got to rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I think as an actress, you, especially, you know, one who doesn't often have the opportunity to play roles that are outside of her own culture, you gravitate toward the material that moves you. And I have always loved this play, and have, I'm also a great fan of Naomi's work. And when I first read this play, probably 4 or 5 years ago, no, yeah, maybe something like that, I don't know. This was the part that, I mean, this was the most effective play that I had read, and we did a reading of it with a theater company that I used to run in New York. This was the most moving play I had seen, and just the ideas behind it, and the way she's written it were so moving. I fell in love with this role right away. Mm-hmm. I never even considered that I would play Tanya or not. I just thought it was so beautifully done. Mm-hmm. And then, so when I had the opportunity to audition, of course, I was absolutely thrilled. And then, it all worked out happily. But I think when you approach a role as an actor, if you're a good actor, which I hope I am, you don't really think about, this is what I find interesting, is everyone's asking me mm-hmm. how I went about it. And I think as an actor, what you're trained to do, which maybe people don't know, is you are trained to play a character by, yes, you look into their, you know, the real details of maybe how they were raised or what they believe and where they grew up, and you put all that together for yourself. But the real work is finding the reality of their immediate circumstances and their truth. So to me, Tanya is a 20-year-old woman who has had a lung transplant, who is going to die mm-hmm. and wants desperately to find someone to love and can't because everyone she dates says, oh, you're going to die. And so the idea of her politics and all that goes in the, it's researched, but it goes in the back of your head. And then as you're playing the scenes, you are looking for the reality of the moment. So Tanya, what I found difficult is that she's angry and upset, and she's a bit racist. Hmm. But the reason, I mean, the truth of that, I can't, as an actor, you can't really judge that. You have to find, mm. you're playing the person, so if you're judging the person, it's not going to help.
But I noticed in the play, that, at the same time, she's unable to, you know, she tells Mourid several times, you know, to go away, it's late,
yeah.
you know, we're closed, but yet she still stays because there's something mm-hmm. that attracts her, that holds her in that relationship.
Yes, I think that she, and at the end, and then, this is difficult for me, I think, in the rehearsal process was, you know, she wants so desperately to be a nurse, so there's this humanitarian side of her where she wants to help this man, and she's in a way charmed by him and wants to, you know, help him if he needs help, but at the same time knows she should say get out. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I mean, she wants to be there in the room with him, but at the same time, she's frightened. So, you know, it's a complicated human being, but I think that's the way that I approach it.
And I think that that's one of the nice things about this play is that it's multidimensional and people aren't just these stereotypes, mm-hmm. whether on the Palestinian or the Israeli side. But, mm-hmm. you know, given your background, your theater training, you've been steeped in the whole, you know, reality of mm-hmm. Palestine and the Israel-Palestinian conflict. So given all of that, all of your experiences and all of your knowledge, how do you see theater and specifically your acting as promoting peace and justice and transformation in the Middle East?
Well, it's fascinating to me because when I chose to be an actor, that was what I wanted to do. And it became political as soon as I began doing professional theater because people would recognize my name and the daughter of, and so every sort of review or interpretation of my work would be constantly based on my identity as a Palestinian. And I thought, well, I really can't escape this. Mm-hmm. And it was frustrating at first. But I think there's a there's a side to it that's actually quite wonderful in that, you know, when I'm on stage playing an Israeli woman, for example, people actually literally are looking at the possibility of a Palestinian woman being an Israeli. Hmm. And then you sort of see this idea that we're human beings in a very basic, simple way, that we're the same. And I don't know what it is, but it has some effect on the audience, I think, in a way that's, wait a minute, what are the possibilities here? And so, as Deborah said, it's sort of the idea, the imagination, and what could be possible, and what might be possible if we just sort of imagine it, or try to imagine a different reality. And so, for me, I think that theater has a wonderful way of, as Deborah said as well, you know, it raises questions. It doesn't, I don't like plays that are didactic or that try to dictate what we should believe or think.
Exactly.
And yes, of course, the playwright's bias will always come through a bit, but I think that what's wonderful is that we're forced to look at things that are ugly and unpleasant, and we're forced to continue talking about them and thinking about them. And I think that, for me, I found that I was overwhelmed as a child by a lot of information about history and reality and politics, and I, as a person, just am not a person who enjoys reading the newspaper. You know, I don't, I can't remember facts, and I can't, but for me, I was able to connect with the idea of Palestine and being a Palestinian in my experiences with other human beings. And that's something that very much learned from my parents. And so theater is like the absolute perfect medium to sort of do that. And I find it has...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. To explore the possibilities.
Yeah,
and to imagine.
It really has a different quality because it affects people so deeply inside. Whereas, you know, arguing about politics or listening to lectures, it raises the same emotions, but there it just becomes rhetoric, and people turn off and stop listening. Whereas when you're watching a human experience, there's a little more room to take it in.
Yeah, that's something that resonates with you and stays with you. Given all of that, can you tell us just a little bit more about your upcoming performance of your play, Palestine, to benefit the Fever Chart, and what led you to write and perform this play?
Sure. Palestine is a long, long, long journey. I began it, it was originally literally a journal entry that I'd written when my father passed away. In New York, I happened to be involved with New York Theater Workshop as a creative artist. And they have been very, very, very active and very involved in promoting and developing the work of Arab American artists. And so they, I had originally performed this sort of 15 minutes of this, what was originally a journal entry, but sort of turned into a performance out of necessity because we needed some material for some event. I performed it, and they had encouraged me to develop it. So I developed it with them at their summer sort of writer's retreat. And then I worked on it with my director and dramaturg for another year or so. And every time I did readings of it and audiences would react to it, I was encouraged to continue. So I wrote the story of my upbringing in New York among Jews with a father who was very, very outspoken Palestinian. And I wrote about my one and only trip to Palestine and my relationship to Lebanon and my feelings and the complicated, you know,
dimensions,
you know,
of that.
The complicated relationship I have with the Middle East in general and wanting it to get out of my life, but being, as Naomi says, unbearably intimate with it. So we ended up doing a off-Broadway run this past year, and when Deborah approached me to do a performance, of course, I was absolutely excited. I mean, for me, again, the dialogue is the most important thing. So if I can help raise more questions or continue the discussion by performing my own story, I'd be more than happy to.
And we look forward to seeing it on December 8th at 7:30 p.m. at the Central Square Theater. And
we're very, I have to add, Najla, we're very, very grateful to you for contributing this performance and so excited to see it and be able to share it with our audiences.
And unfortunately, our time is up today, so I'd like to thank you both for joining us. It was a pleasure sharing time with you, and please keep us abreast of any new developments at the theater or in your acting career, Najla, and I wish you both continued success in your future endeavors. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Well, the same to you. Thank you.
You have a great
day.
Thank you. And this concludes another edition of This Week in Palestine, a 45-minute segment that is part of Truth and Justice Radio, airing on WZBC 90.3 from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. We hope you join us again next week. Salam.